Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 303 of the podcast, recorded September 2nd, 2020. Dead Space Gods.
Okay, we are back, and this week it is a different assortment. It is me and Nick and Anna.
Hi.
Hello.
And, so yeah, I guess I should point that out. We pre-record our intro, so we can tell the different voices apart, and then sometimes it's not those voices. So, though you just heard Randy, Nick, and Dave, Dave will not be appearing in this podcast, because Anna has replaced him.
That's yes, true. I killed Dave. I'm slowly working my way through the Rogues Gallery staff. You're next, Randy.
Damn it! That's what they tell me.
Well, no, I want to cultivate, like, an aura of fear.
Oh, that's good. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
So we're going to start off with some store news. Anna and I were kind of nerding out this morning, and Dave and Nick were kind of staring at us and making fun of us because Wizards of the Coast just announced their magic plans for 2021. The next thing that's coming up is Zendikar Rising, which they gave a preview of that.
Yeah.
That's coming up in like 2 weeks. Looks really cool.
The return of some neat mechanics.
Yeah.
Kicker and flip cards, but also like just some exciting stuff in the game.
And they're introducing a new mechanic. We think it's a new mechanic called the Party.
Yeah, it's definitely a new mechanic.
Okay, which basically consists of up to one card of a cleric, a rogue, a warrior, and a wizard. And if that sounds somewhat familiar, because that's kind of a D&D thing. And basically, when you have that out, it'll give you bonuses depending on the cards have abilities. But we're thinking the reason they introduced that is because they just announced the first ever sort of D&D Wizards D&D Magic crossover going that way.
Yeah, and it's actually going to be standard legal. Like, they're all black-bordered cards, so yep. You can play them, like, at any Friday Night Magic, which is super cool because, like, they don't normally do that. Like, a lot of the non-magic weird sets, they're not playable.
Right, like the what are the unhinged?
Unhinged and all that are usually not standard legal.
Yeah.
This is
replacing their core set for next year. The core sets. People complain about the core sets because they're like people skip them. They're like, oh, this is just kind of reprints of stuff. But no, they're replacing the core set next year with Adventures in the Forgotten Realms, which is going to be a D&D themed magic set, which sounds super cool to me.
Yeah, I'm excited. And if they print a legendary, like a mythic legendary Minsk and Boo.
Oh my god.
Or anything like that, I will flip my lid.
I almost feel like that's gotta be the buy a box card.
Almost assuredly. Because he's so popular.
Yeah, or Drizzt.
Yeah, oh man, I would love that too. Man, I have such a fondness for the Forgotten Realms. Like, if they had, like, prints of basically any of the characters from the Baldur's Gate series.
Yep.
I will spend so much money.
Can you imagine being Ed Greenwood, the guy who created Baldur's Gate? Like, it was his home campaign.
Yeah.
And then it basically, like, he sold it to Wizards, he sold it to TSR.
Yeah.
And it became their official world, and now it is, like, the official world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a level of nerd cred that men can only dream of.
Right?
Then they just real quick, they mentioned what the next year's magic sets are going to be. They're doing Kaldheim, which is their Viking-inspired. Strixhaven, which is the most elite university in the multiverse, which school of magic sounds a little Harry Potter-esque, sounds fun. And then they are going back to Innistrad, which is their sort of gothic horror, and they're doing a set that's werewolves and a set that's vampires.
And on the list of things that I'll spend a lot of money on, the werewolf set and the Viking set, which are my two,
I know, right?
Two jams. That's if there was, my bread and butter.
If there was a werewolf Viking setting of some kind, you would have to get it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there technically is a werewolf Viking setting in World of Darkness, which is why that's the only game that I play.
Oh, that's fair. That makes sense.
So,
speaking of games, we did get a bunch of indie RPGs in this week. This is the thing that Dave and I always dig into with the various indie RPGs. So we got so many that we actually set up a new display in the store of indie RPGs. And there's a whole section that's powered by the Apocalypse, which, if you don't know, Apocalypse World is like this game system where instead of the DM like rolling for monsters and stuff, it's kind of the players are always the ones rolling, and the DM is kind of reacting to them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot of games based around Apocalypse World is set in a sort of a post-apocalyptic kind of thing. Dungeon World was the fantasy version of that. And we've got both of those back in stock. But they've also used it for a variety of other games. And one of those is Bite Marks, which involves werewolves.
Yeah, it's really awesome. The whole thing is about, like, werewolf pack dynamics. So you're, like, getting into trouble and going on adventures, and you have, like, your found family of werewolves, and honestly, that's just literally the only thing that I could possibly ask for.
It feels like this game was... When I saw this game, I'm like, hey, Anna, somebody made a game for you.
Yeah, I made the store order it.
But that looks cool. It's got a nice little hardcover, too.
Yeah, and it's, like, it's not super... Actually, it's not super expensive, yeah. And, like, it's well-bound, and there's, like, great art in it. I'm really stoked.
Also on the Apocalypse World front, we got in Masks, which is the game of teenage superheroes, and we got all the various expansion packs for it. There's like several different little books,
yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. We played one game of that before chaos erupted, both in game and out of game.
Yeah,
our ex-staffer Kate blew up a hostage situation in just an unfortunate way.
No, that wasn't Kate. That was Max.
Was that Max?
Yeah, Max still works here.
Oh, okay.
Max blew up the hostage situation.
Yeah, that's right. Max made a foolish decision that got a bunch of hostages, almost got an entire bank full of hostages killed.
But isn't that just a teenage superhero book?
It is, yes. Anyway, it's a lot of fun. If you have a fondness for, like, New Mutants or, what are teenage superheroes? Teen Titans?
Yeah, Teen Titans.
Young Avengers.
Are the Teen Titans a teenage superhero book? The Teen Titans?
The Young Avengers Champions, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's it's fun, and we got all that. We also got the newest version of Champions Now, mm-hmm. which takes the venerable superhero franchise and turns it into more of an indie RPG. I played a ton of Champions in college, so I'm kind of excited to see that. There is Ryutama.
Yeah, that one looks really neat. I know I killed Dave, so I'm going to pretend that I absorbed some of his knowledge.
Yes.
He's probably the one who should talk about this, because he has it. But it's basically like Miyazaki's like Oregon Trail.
Yes.
And so like the goal is like you're playing like a group of settlers on an adventure, or
yeah.
a group of explorers on an adventure.
Yeah.
And the way that they tout it is it's like it is... every bit about the journey so much as it is about actually getting there.
Right.
And quite frankly, I think that that's sort of like just almost a directionless meandering game sounds super fun.
Yeah, and it looks... The book is
it's
gorgeous.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really nice. Full color, hardcover.
Can you die of dysentery?
I mean, I feel like you probably must be able to die of dysentery since it says Oregon Trail... Miyazaki's Oregon Trail on the back
of it. But it's Miyazaki, so it's going to drive emotional dysentery.
I mean, the art is gorgeous. It is very on the level of sort of that Nausicaa kind of... Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is amazing.
Detail.
Yeah.
There's like in the creature compendium section of it, there's like these beautiful like hand sketch drawings of monsters along with like written descriptions of them that look like an explorer's journal, basically.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Manual.
Yeah.
Also, you've got another one that's over there.
Yeah, it's called Never Going Home, and it's sort of like almost a diesel punk, but like cathonic horror set in World War I.
Interesting.
And so, like, basically, from what I understand is it's like World War I was like so horrific that it like tore open a veil, and these like cathonic monsters... called the Whispers.
Oh, nice.
Are like starting to mess with people. And so rather than being about fighting your enemies, it is now about like trying to get home safely.
Oh, that's cool.
And rather than being focused on like individual characters, you focus on like your unit as a group.
Oh, that's fun. I like that.
And so the idea is that as long as you, I don't know, let's call them like the 501st. As long as the 501st gets home, it doesn't matter how many people survive. The system is built for you to roll up new characters as you keep playing so that, like, you know, you don't feel bad when one of your characters dies. And it's supposed to be a very community-oriented
game. I'm just going
to
say, the title does not fill me with hope that they're going to get home.
It's kind of like Dread, which we also got back in stock. Like, you're going to die.
You're going
to
die.
You're never going to get home. You're going to have fun playing this game where you're going to die.
But it has, like, this amazing aesthetic, too. It's like all of these, like, World War I, like, era gas masks and helmets and stuff and, like, mixed with this weird mysticism, like, with, antlers like on the helmets and like dog tags turned into charms and stuff. It's really cool.
The art and design of some of these games is really, like, even if you don't get a chance to play a lot of them, which I don't get a chance to play as many games as I like, but, like, I want these just for the aesthetics of them.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of Cthulhu, there is a Cthulhu game called Cthulhu Dark, That is a... It's got a series of rules and a guide to the mythos. But then there's four settings. And I think this is what's interesting. There's Arkham 1692, which is the ancient city in the time of witches. So you combine sort of Salem and Arkham stuff.
Oh, that's delightful.
London 1851, where you do Victorian England. Jaiwo 2017, in which evil emerges from the ruins of empire in Africa.
Interesting.
And then Mumbai 2037, tales of twisted cyberpunk horror in near future India.
What? That's so cool.
That is all cool and makes me want to play this.
Man, that makes me want to play that so bad.
So I am sort of in Lovecraft mode right now anyway, because of Lovecraft Country and sort of a reinvention of it across different... The Mumbai 2037 is what got me. That sounds super cool. One of my favorite cyberpunk games came back in. This is another Apocalypse Power board. That's the Sprawl.
Yeah. And it's super cool. I've picked that one up. I've read through it a couple times. Really like it.
There's also a Forged in the Dark version, if you like that system. There's a Blade cyberpunk of that as well.
Yeah, so. I saw that one as well. Seems neat.
Couple more, because there's lots. But there's also one called Bluebeard's Bride that is a new one. It's this really pretty hardcover.
Yeah.
Basically, it's based on the story of Bluebeard, where a young woman is wed to an ugly, powerful man, told to explore the home but leave that one forbidden room alone, and it's whether or not you are a faithful or disloyal bride. You play a variety of archetypes of different women, and it sounds interesting.
That reminds me a little bit of that that Dead Man story that DC did a little while back.
Yeah,
it's that
House
Haunted
one.
Mansion.
There's plenty more. We could talk about all of them, but there's a lot of stuff. Check through the indie RPGs. I think you'll be pleased with what you find. Real quick, I'm gonna mention a couple of board games that we got in. Their first is called Truffle Shuffle, and it is a card drafting game, family friendly, where you're trying to draft card chocolate arrangements. So you remember how you would get those awful when you get the box of chocolates and you get the one that's got like the nougat in it?
I like that.
I think you're trying to avoid. Oh, if you're Anna, you're trying to get it, but everyone else is trying to avoid the nougat.
Yeah, I'm trying to avoid the peanut butter one because the peanut butter one will kill me.
That brings a high stakes kind of candy too. You probably don't do a lot of the candy boxes for that reason, though.
No, I do. I'm just a gambler.
Have you ever had dessert or death?
I mean, I've had a couple of close calls. People hated me at Christmas.
That's amazing.
I had so many allergic reactions when I was a kid.
There's also a game called Half Truth, which is a new party game by Richard Garfield, who designed a little game called Magic the Gathering.
Have we heard of that game?
Yeah, I think we were talking about that a little while.
Oh, that's crazy.
And also King of Tokyo. And his co-designer is 74-time Jeopardy winner Ken Jennings.
Interesting.
So, like, this, like, legendary game designer, legendary trivia guy, came up with a thing. It's got 500 trivia cards and a range of categories. The thing comes out, the card has six answers on it, three of which are right and three of which are wrong. You place bets on which answers are right, and then you push your luck or play it safe as the risk and reward change for each question.
As a gambler, that sounds super fun.
Yes, there's no risk of death unless whoever gets it wrong has to eat peanut butter, I guess.
No, we play the Klingon version.
And then finally, Mariposas, which is from the designer of Wingspan, the beloved game of, like, bird watching. Here is the beloved game of Butterfly Migration. This designer, a rare female game designer, Elizabeth Hargrave, not super rare, but you don't see a lot of those names in there. She has now made two games based on what sound like really boring premises, and Wingspan is amazing, and I'm super looking forward to playing Mariposas, which is about, you play in three seasons, you're trying to guide, you're trying to basically have the most successful family of butterflies and win the game.
Given how fast Wingspan sold off of our shelves and how it's never ever in stock, I'm sure this is an excellent
game. Although it is in stock right now.
Is it?
We have one copy left.
Oh, that's magic.
Yeah. And then one more thing. We got new dice bags.
Oh my god, they are so good.
We got the plush Skittermanders, which are the Starfinder ones, and they're four different colors. And then we got sharks.
I love the sharks.
Yeah.
I bought one for myself and then one for my partner immediately.
We also got the D&D, the adorable figures.
Oh, right. Figurines of Adorable Power, yeah.
We got the Flumph and the Mimic and...
Yep. The Gazer.
The Gazer, and there's the Hippo, and The Gif. They are all amazing.
Yeah. And the Owlbear and the Red Dragon came back in, too.
They did.
So, yeah, if you need a little thing for your desk, there's all kinds of little figures of Adorable Power. All right. So that's all the store news. Let's jump over to the news for the week, and let's start with the big old bummer, which is the Chadwick Boseman news. This was... I was playing D&D. It was in mid-Zoom D&D, and this popped up and, like, just completely wrecked my night.
Yeah.
Like, I did not expect... No one expected this, except for the few people who knew that Chadwick Boseman was going through this.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, he died at age 43 of colon cancer, which, by the way, could totally have been me.
No.
Because I got colon cancer at age 41, and I just got my 5-year all clear last week. No. Which I'm glad I got that before I saw this news, because I am definitely a superstitious person when it comes to this, and this would have freaked me the hell out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, I mean, by all accounts, Chadwick Boseman, in addition to being Black Panther and carrying this iconic role, he was, like, a good guy.
Yeah.
Well, he was also a good dude.
Yeah.
He also played Jackie Robinson. Yep.
Thurgood Marshall.
Yep. I mean, he was, by all accounts, beloved. I mean, just by everybody who met him, just a genuine guy.
And here's the crazy thing. He's been fighting this for 4 years. Like, he had cancer and was fighting cancer when he made Black Panther.
Yep.
And when he made Avengers, the two Avengers movies. Like, that's crazy.
Also, to be, like, as fit and as physically active as he would have had to have been on set while also going through all the treatments and stuff, like, the fortitude must have been, like, incredible.
It's insane. I've been through that chemo, and it is no joke. I mean, I could barely work for a lot of that time. The idea of making those movies and turning in those performances and creating something that's going to last forever. Like, his Black Panther is iconic. I've rewatched the movie 3 times since the news came down. And, man, he was so perfect for that role, and it was so important to the Marvel Universe and to, you know, fans everywhere, especially Black fans.
I was going to say, the number of, like, things that I have seen on social media of people, like, legitimately mourning is a testament to the cultural impact of how important it was to see him on screen.
Yeah, for sure. All right, and that's rest in peace, rest in power, Chadwick Boseman. Let's talk a little more fun stuff. So, Star Trek Discovery has finally got a release date for its 3rd season.
Yes.
It is, I think, October 15th.
Yep.
It is mid-October, which is, in 2020 terms, super far away.
I was going to say, like, 10 years from now.
Yes.
A lot can happen.
A lot can happen.
Alternatively, or it's 20 minutes from now.
Right,
I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, right. But I think we're all excited to see Star Trek come back.
Oh, yeah.
Love Discovery.
It's my favorite of the Star Trek shows, so...
I can't decide whether I like it better or worse, better than Picard or not, but I think I do.
I think I probably like it more than Picard, now that I think about it. I actually just recently did a rewatch.
Oh, okay.
A friend of mine hadn't seen it before, and I was like, oh, well, we're going to change that. And they were like, I don't want to give money to the streaming service. And I was like, well, good news. You can come over to my house and watch it. Now they're giving money to the streaming service.
Yeah.
But long story short... I just finished my rewatch. I'm completely in love with it. I forgot how, like, emotionally, like, invested I was in that crew by the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing that I'm sad about is that there won't be more Pike and Spock on Discovery.
No.
But I'm stoked to see what they are going to do, because it's a place where Trek has never been before.
Yeah, but we are going to get more Pike and Spock. I knew it was going to happen. On the spinoff, which I'm super excited about.
Yep.
So excited.
The CBS All Access kept me, because I decided to go and watch The Good Wife, which I fell in love with. Not The Good Wife, The Good Fight.
Yeah.
Which is their other original. And then I watched Evil, and then I was like, okay, well, they're still around. Lower Decks is coming out. I tried to cancel CBS All Access 3 times now. And every time I cancel it, they're like, would you like 2 months at 50% off? And I'm like, yes, I would. And then I canceled it, and then Lower Decks came on. I'm like, well, I'm at least going to watch this. And then recently I was like, okay... Before I saw this news, I was like, no, I'm not super into Lower Decks. Maybe I'll just cancel this and catch up on Lower Decks later. And I was like, I canceled it. And they're like, would you like 2 months for 50% off? And I'm like, yes, I would. And so now I'm on again. I'm going to finish watching Lower Decks. Then Discovery's going to happen. And then The Stand is going to happen, because The Stand got a release date in December.
Yep.
And we saw the teaser for that. And that's, it's all like kind of atmospheric in moments.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of into it.
Get a little bit of Whoopi Goldberg as
Abigail.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I know, Nick, you and I have both. Have you read the book?
Oh, yeah.
So I've never read the entire book, because it's like 6,000 pages long.
Yeah, it's
so
long.
It's like a little like 1,500, but okay.
Ballpark.
That might as well be 6,000 pages, Nick.
I did really enjoy the TV miniseries.
Yeah, the miniseries was good.
Anna, what about you? Where are you on the stand? Have you read or seen or...
So I've seen two adaptations of it, maybe. Okay. Maybe one adaptation. Anyway, I dated a girl years and years ago who was a huge Stephen King fan, and she made me watch The Stand, and then she made me try to read The Stand, but I read...
But it's 6,000 pages long?
Yeah, I get distracted reading comic books, so that was, I think, probably like a bit of a tall order.
Yep.
But long story short... I like it. I don't know if I love it,
yeah.
But the trailer hooked me. I'm excited at least for the cast that they have playing the roles.
Yeah, I am too. And it's got some good moody stuff. Like, I actually really liked the Stand miniseries, but I'm sure it doesn't hold up. I'm sure it looks very 90s.
As someone who watched it, like, maybe 6 years ago,
yeah.
No, it's not.
However, I will say probably the first episode holds up. That's
pretty creepy.
That creepy...
the New York Tunnel sequence?
Well, no, the outbreak, essentially.
Oh, yeah. Don't Fear the Reaper?
Don't Fear the Reaper song playing. Yeah. It's just... yeah.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see this. I hope it's good. We have a little bit of news. Neither of you guys have read The Banks, right? The new... from TKO?
No.
I read the first issue and liked it. It's basically a multi-generational crime story. It's about a family of black women... grandmother, a mother, and a daughter. The daughter now works at a bank, and she is like gone legit, whereas the other two are like longtime criminals. She doesn't associate with them anymore, but she kind of gets passed over promotion, screwed over at work, and decide they're going to do this big heist.
Okay.
And they have decided they're going to develop this as a movie, and that sounds super cool.
That
I'm
does.
Excited to see who they cast for the parts.
Love that.
And I love me a good heist movie.
Yeah. I also love a good heist movie where you are getting back at your place of employment.
Wait a minute. There's nothing to heist here.
There's nothing to heist here, no. But I just mean, like, I think it's a cool premise. Just like, I love a good heist as revenge.
I'm a little worried that you're going to murder me.
I'm not going to murder you, Randy.
Okay. We also saw the trailer for Netflix's Enola Holmes, which is coming up in September, and that looks super fun.
It does. I like Sherlock Holmes. This is based on a book, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right, yeah.
Or a young adult series or something.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it has, what, Millie Bobby Brown
plays Enola, which is Alone Backwards.
Yep.
She is raised by her mother, Helena Bonham Carter, who I gather is like... Is she supposed to be Sherlock and Mycroft's
I believe
mom
so.
Too?
I believe so.
Okay. And she's being raised as sort of this outsider, and then her mom disappears, and she has to go into London to investigate and discover, and her brothers both, like, are kind of, like, putting her off.
Sherlock is played by Henry Cavill.
Sherlock's played by Henry
Delightful
Cavill.
Delightful choice.
I don't know who plays Mycroft.
And then so she has to, like, fit into Victorian society so that she can investigate this crime. It looks super fun.
Yeah. Also, I love in the trailer she kicks a whole bunch of ass.
Yeah, she does.
So it has like a lot of energy, a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to this. Final bit of news. This is early news. We don't always talk about newer stuff, but it is right up our alley. Arnold Schwarzenegger is coming to TV. His first scripted TV show.
Yep.
Because he did, of course, host an episode, a series of the season of The Apprentice.
Yep. So I forgot about that.
Yep. So they're careful to say he will start his first scripted TV show, playing a spy dad with a daughter. Which, if they are not doing basically a True Lies sequel, I'd be very disappointed.
I think this is probably Schwarzenegger wanting to do a True Lies sequel, but James Cameron's like, nah, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
Which I'm fine.
Whatever. It doesn't have to be, but
I like Schwarzenegger. I'm just down with this one. I think it's just a fun concept.
What would be amazing is if this is a True Lies sequel show. Like, Jamie Lee Curtis would do TV at this point, I'm sure.
She did TV. She did Scream Queens.
Yeah, that's what I mean. She would do a TV show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they could get everybody.
They could get everybody. What's Elijah Dushku doing? Nothing.
I'm sure she's... I don't know.
She'd come back and be the spy daughter.
What was the last thing she did? Dollhouse?
Yeah, maybe. It's been a while.
And she, like, towards the end of that, she was executive producing it. Yeah. But after that, I don't think
she... No, she did something after that. Some kind of, like, clone show or something, I think. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Her slate is empty at this point. Yeah. I think she could join this as well.
This is probably not that, but I'm still down with Schwarzenegger playing a spy with a daughter. That sounds fun.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun.
All right. We're going to take a break for a second. We're going to come back and talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, September 2nd. And I think the first thing we want to mention is the new Boom book with the title that I think is longer than Something Is Killing the Children.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We Only Find Them When They're Dead.
We Only Find Them When They're Dead.
Man, Boom is really, really, really at it with the menacing long titles.
Yeah, yep. It's not as catchy as Something Is Killing the Children.
No, Something Is Killing the Children is the best, but We Only Find Them When They're Dead. Yeah. It's also pretty good.
I kind of love it. Yeah. You know?
But this is Al Ewing, yep. And I forget who's doing the art because I don't have the book in front of
me. It's Simone DiMatteo, I think. I'm going to find that because I had it. Here it is. Yes, Simone DiMatteo, who did, I believe, some Power Ranger stuff.
Okay, it's beautiful art.
Yeah.
It's very colorful. It's very pop. But this is sort of... it's a world-building issue in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
We're introduced to a sort of a group of individuals who have been doing this job for years and, like, decades and lifetimes. And this job is, I mean...
Okay, they find dead space gods, like Galactus-style space gods. They find them, and then they...
strip them for parts.
They strip them for parts. Like, this one, they get a bunch of stuff off the cheek. They get a bunch of...
Yeah, you have your designation area, and if you try to stray outside of that, things are go well for you.
Yeah.
You will get into fights. Space fights.
Yes. It's a really interesting concept. And, I mean, there's more to it than that, but I actually thought it was a really good first issue.
Yeah.
The concept is good, like the harvesting space gods for their meat and their organs.
Yep.
But
terrifying.
They're setting it up for what looks like a heist thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know I love heists.
Yes.
So,
and Al Ewing is a great writer.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's proved that with numerous titles, especially Immortal Hulk. So yeah, I'm definitely behind this book.
And I know you were somewhat creeped out when you found out what it actually was.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they were like... Well, so I was thinking, like, that they were, I don't know, like, machines or something.
Right.
But, like, there was, like, a panel where they're like, I hope we can take the eyeballs. Like, jelly is selling for a lot these days. And
yeah.
I was just like, oh my god, that's so gross.
Yep. Yep.
Like, it's weird and cool, but it's gross.
It is ghoulish, yeah.
I mean, it's a little like, what's his name from Pacific Rim?
Hannibal Chow.
Hannibal Chow, yeah. Like, yeah. Going after various monster parts.
Yep.
Well, only this is, like, a little more, like, disturbing, because, like, they're very human.
Yeah.
Like, they don't look... Like, Galactus looks less human than this god that they are taking apart in this issue. So,
yeah.
Like, it's pretty creepy, especially, like, once they start showing, like, the... I guess the dialogue of how the characters refer to, like, the parts.
Yep.
Like there's a panel where she's like, oh, yeah, cool, we got, like, the good meat.
The good meat.
And it's like... What?
Well, also the sort of dialogue of them, like, all's well. There's like the cadence of their speech is very interesting.
Yeah, he's doing sort of the Moby Dick style.
Yeah.
At sea, except you're in space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun stuff. I think we all dug it.
Yeah.
There's also a new number one. This is Marvel Zombies Resurrected, which is not tied into the Marvel Zombies that had come before.
It is tied into the one-shot.
So
there's
a one-shot, like, I want to say, like, 2 years ago that I really liked, that I talked about on this podcast, where a space-based heroes like Thor and Captain Marvel and all those guys, they found Galactus floating dead in space. They went in to investigate. I guess this is the theme of this week is dead space gods.
Yes.
And... they went in and they discovered him infested with the evil zombies.
Yep.
And that was it. And then we never got a second issue.
Exactly. It was very weird. And we couldn't figure out exactly why that was.
Yeah.
Come to find out, a year and a half later, we get Marvel Zombies Resurrection number one.
And it is the right. It's Philip Kennedy Johnson. The art is by Leonard Kirk. And basically, it starts off in this world, world where people are running from superpowered zombies coming out of a desiccated Galactus floating over the city. And Spider-Man is trying to get Valeria and Franklin away and flying away in the Fantasticar.
Yep.
And then a zombie human torch comes and crashes them. And then he wakes up, and this was a flashback to what had happened. And it's all sort of post-apocalyptic, as it is Peter Parker, Forge, Valeria and Franklin Richards, and Moonstone from Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
As well as one other member I don't want to give away.
Exactly.
And they are basically, they've been out here scavenging. Forge is making them weapons. They fight a zombie X-Man. And then they make their way to a landmark of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, notable landmark.
And it is going to be it's a question of sort of survival versus heroism, all the kind of stuff you get. It is not goofy. It's
yeah, I was
going to
say, it is not like Robert Kirkman's Marvel Zombies, where the zombies were sort of cracking wise and kind of there was a level of humor to it.
Yeah.
This is definitely more... Not like Walking Dead.
Well, the funny thing is, like, ironically, it is like Walking Dead. This feels like Walking Dead, and it is about what you do to survive in the post-apocalyptic world.
Deceased has kind of been a staff favorite. Would you say that this is, like, a similar vibe to Deceased?
Similar. It's not... Deceased is all about the superheroes interacting. This is, like, mostly normal people. I mean, Forge is weapons, and Peter Parker is Spider-Man, but... They're not in costumes or anything like that.
Yeah.
And they are definitely, like, overwhelmed. Like, they're definitely outgunned and that kind of thing. So, it's similar in that Deceased also has, like, the evil zombies. Like, they talk and they're, you know, they're like, malevolent and not just, like hungry monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marvel Zombies has that, too. They call them the Respawn.
Yeah.
And I like this first issue. I'm looking forward to the other three. So, it's a good... If you like... Zombie stories. There's several twists we did not give away, which I'm really loath to give away, but there's some good stuff in there.
There are some very interesting concepts the further you get into the issue.
Yeah. Anna, let's talk about this week's Deceased. We don't want to give too much away, but I know that we have been loving Deceased Dead Planet.
Yeah. At the end of the last issue, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to keep reading.
Uh-huh.
I'm too sad.
Because they killed some of your favorite characters.
And then the beginning of this issue, I was like, okay, I'll give you a couple more pages. And then, like, a few pages later, I was like, every other page, it was like, oh, I hate this. Oh, I love this. Oh, I hate this.
Yeah.
By the end, I think I finally settled that it is excellent and definitely should be read.
Tom Taylor definitely does the pull on your heartstrings.
Yeah, he really does.
He does that in Suicide Squad, too.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I feel like this issue of DC's Dead Planet, I think it's... Is that the DC book we're all reading? Like, literally everybody?
Yeah.
Well, it's also not only is the one we're reading; it's the one we like the most. It is like at the top of DC at the moment, mainly because it is dark.
Yep.
But Taylor finds a way of kind of balancing the dark and the fun, and the never kind of delves too far into the. Okay, this is just so
hopeless.
Downtrodden and hopeless.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, it has crypto in it. How could it be hopeless?
There's a scene in here... that's true, but there's a scene with Damien that it's just like, oh, this is the warmth and the niceness that I need.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like in Injustice, Tom Taylor does such great moment-to-moment stuff for the characters. He really gets the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's also writing a Swamp Thing that I really love.
Oh, yeah.
And incorporating sort of the magic verse of the DC universe into this in a way I wasn't expecting. There's some characters that show up that I'm like, oh, okay. I was wondering if they would survive.
And Nick, we also got Black Widow number 1, which I know you read the variant that we got. Like, for some reason, they sent it to us months ago.
Yeah, and it's a good start. I love the artwork. There's a surprise villain that I was super in love with.
Yeah.
But it's my favorite version of the Black Widow, of her various series that have appeared in the past decade.
Well, what's interesting is they seem to be doing a story where she has amnesia and doesn't know she's a spy.
Correct. Yeah.
That's an interesting twist.
Yeah, it's very unlike the Black Widow books that have come before, so I'm curious to see where they go with it.
And also in the... Femme Spy category, we have Spy Island from Image.
Yes. Spy Island is very cheeky.
This is
Chelsea Kane who did Man-Eaters.
Which is also very cheeky.
Yes, and this is about an island where spies live. And it's in the Bermuda Triangle, and it is... And this is a world...
More like the Bermuda Spy Angle.
Yes. But this is a world filled with weird things, like mermaids and...
Are you fucking proud of me?
I'm actually more proud of the look that you're giving me for that pun than I am of the actual pun.
This podcast is over.
Yeah, I actually thought you were going to hear Anna actually murdering me live on the podcast.
See, at this point, I just roll over. It's fine. I've heard of enough.
I mean, you silently rocking back and forth.
Yep. I was proud of the pun. I looked over, and you looked like you wanted to murder me, and then I was even prouder.
Getting back to the book in question. No, it's fine. But this island is where all the spies go to live, essentially. But this world is definitely kind of weird. It's got Nazi U-boat ghost captains, supervillains, six-toed cats, undead pirates, and weird... Basically just weird shit. But it's a lot of fun.
Was this book written by a word generator?
Probably so.
That is weird.
There's drinks called orgasms, and...
That's actually true.
I was going to say, they have those in real life.
Yeah, they do.
But they also have Nazi U-boat captains in real life,
but
too.
But not ghost Nazi, I hope. I mean, 2020 isn't over yet.
You never know. And also, they reveal that the place where most spies go are weird fundraisers. Which, it's just fundraisers is where you will find most spies.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I really kind of liked its humor, and Chelsea Kane does humor well. I mean, if you've read Maneaters, you know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Right. But this one is just as funny, and the art by, I don't know, I'm blanking on the art, but it's gorgeous.
Oh, this is Dark Horse, not Image, isn't it?
This is Dark Horse.
Huh. Yeah.
So if you like cheeky spy stuff with a weird bent to it, I would definitely check this out.
Two more number ones this week I want to mention. One is the Sumerian People of the Black Circle, which is just a sort of a mature reader's Conan. It is not Marvel. I guess this is somewhat public domain or something. It has art by Jaekwang Park. I think he's a Korean artist, and the art is very pretty. It's like a manhwa Conan, full color manhwa. It's interesting. And then the other one is the Orville Launch Day. This is the second miniseries Dark Horse has done.
Yep.
This feels like, it's just a two parter, but it feels like an Orville episode.
Oh, yeah.
It's got the feel of the characters really well. It's got the artist does a really good job of the likenesses and such. I believe the writer is someone who's written on the show.
I believe it's
got the voices so well. But if you're missing the Orville, and I know I am, this is a good fill-in for it. Also want to mention that Empire comes to an end this week with number 6. So that wraps up. And then, Nick, you wanted a quick mention, Transformers Secrets and Lies. Are you enjoying that?
Yeah, this is a miniseries written by Simon Furman, who is sort of the godfather of all things Transformers. His brain is like the Mark Wade of the Transformers universe.
Yeah.
He has kind of this breadth of knowledge, utilizing things from, like, the Japanese cartoon. This is a lot of fun. I love the art style, which is done in sort of the 80s era Transformers world. But utilizing characters like Praxis and Scorponok and just Ultra Magnus, just a bunch of fun. I'm a Transformers nut, so this is kind of hitting kind of right where I want. But I think it's accessible as well. And there's a fun writer's commentary in the back by Furman that kind of goes through it and kind of lets you know kind of the nods that he's making here and there. Plus, it has the Dinobots, which the Dinobots are always fun.
Oh, yeah, nice. All right, so we're gonna pause that there and come back. We're gonna talk about Nick's binges through horror movies, some trades Anna's been reading, and possibly some other stuff. All right, it is September, or as at least two members of my staff call it, September.
Yep.
Which means it is time for horror movies, and Nick, you got a big jump on it. You finally jumped onto the Shudder service.
I did, because I needed another streaming service, but my wife and I were just like, you know what, screw it, it's fine.
But you haven't watched One Cut of the Dead yet, which is one of the best reasons to have Shudder.
Right. I did watch a bunch of other things, though. Yes. I barely slept this weekend. Essentially, I just consumed all things horror.
Right, okay.
So I'm going to run through this. I'm not going to, like, go too far, but... if you like your 80s movies, there's a movie called Summer of 84, which is about kids bored out of their skull when a serial killer pops up in their neck of the woods, and they decide to be the people to find him out because they think their neighbor across the street is said serial killer.
Okay.
It's got echoes of The Burbs, but it's in its execution and sort of the third act flip that I was really surprised with. It goes in a direction that I was not expecting at all. So I highly recommend that.
What's the tone? Is it like...
It's kind of comedic, but there's kind of this dark, sinister undertone to
it
as well.
Would you compare it like The Babysitter?
Not quite as pop as that.
Okay, all right.
It's not as funny, but the interactions with the kids, they're definitely leaning heavily into sort of Stranger Things territory where they're talking about pretty much like 80s movies and things like that.
Okay,
all right. There's a movie that's actually a Shudder original called Mayhem, which is Steven Yeun and Samara Weaving.
Oh, is that... That's a Shudder original?
Yeah.
That one I want to see.
Yeah, it's basically a Tarantino movie as a virus has been just unleashed on the world, essentially.
I thought it was just in that office building.
No, it's something that the world knows about, and outbreaks occur randomly.
Okay.
And this time it happens in an office building, and this virus, which is kind of like the ID7 virus or something, it lowers inhibitions and makes you basically do just whatever your body wants to do, essentially.
So it's your id.
And I love Samara Weaving. She basically can do no wrong at this point.
Samara Weaving's amazing.
And Steven Yeun, I mean, Walking Dead is the only thing I really have seen him in.
He was good in it.
Yeah, he was great in it. He's the lead here.
Okay.
And he does a great job as sort of this downtrodden executive that basically gets the axe as this as the building is shut down and the virus escapes. So you can imagine what he might want to do to the upper echelon of the company that he works for.
All right,
but it's bloody, it's violent, it's a lot of fun though.
Okay, so yeah, that's
this one is list. Sort of like on that level of Babysitter, where is the humor and the violence are sort of on par with one in each other. Then there's a movie called The Haunt, which is sort of a group of people go to a haunted house in a kind of remote area. They're just like, we just want to scare. And they go into it, and they find that this is run by, like, I would compare it to, like, Saw.
Oh, okay.
So
they get a scare.
They get a scare. It is a very kind of slasher element. It's produced by Eli Roth, so you can imagine sort of... He's the guy who did Hostel, and, you know, it's violent, but it's done with sort of, it's really, really well done. Okay. And I don't know any of the actors in it, and that helps with, like, sort of, because they could be anybody, and it's just a lot of fun. Then, what else did I watch? I watched Better Watch Out.
Okay.
This was a... dark comedy Christmas horror film.
Okay.
Basically Home Alone turned on its head.
I've heard of this one.
I don't want to say much more than that.
Yeah.
Because the flip that happens is weird, and I was really into it.
I have heard of this, yeah.
Level of, like, existential dread? Well, like, what is the level of tension? Like, how scary would you say this movie is?
This is not scary. It's more kind of, like, interesting as... because I've not seen this kind of thing done in the way it's packaged.
Okay.
Because
what you described, I really want to see. But I can't watch horror movies, because I have anxiety.
Don't watch The Haunt, then.
I will not.
Or the next one I want to talk about, which was probably one of my favorites. It's called Hell House LLC. It's a found footage film about a... basically a haunted house that takes place, or they're setting it up in a small town outside of New York called Abaddon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know, the name in itself. And it opens with something having happened. 15 people were killed, but no one's talking about it, and you sort of, throughout, they kind of flashback using found footage of the crew. They were filming what they were, as they were building the haunted house, and it's just sort of the level of detail and kind of the scares they are able to put in, and the level of dread and that you get that I was really, really impressed with. It's probably one of my favorite found footage films that I've seen.
Okay.
And lastly, I watched Bong Joon-ho's The Host, which I'd never seen before.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple of his other movies, but this one, for some reason, I hadn't.
Yeah.
But this is sort of... his creature feature has the main guy from the dad from Parasite as the main character.
Okay.
And it's all about sort of a family trying to rescue the guy's daughter that has been kidnapped by this giant sea creature. Yeah, it's basically like this weird kind of mutation of fish and octopus kind of thing that has been created from like a doctor or like a mortician dumping a ton of formaldehyde into the river.
So this sounds like a that this monster is a political commentary?
Oh, well, that's Bong Joon-ho. I mean, he always does that.
When you say giant sea monster, how big? Is it, like, kaiju-sized? Or is
No. Actually, I say giant, but it's... I say a giant relatively to a fish.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's, like...
Humans?
No. It's bigger than that.
Okay.
Like rhinoceros? A little bit larger than a rhinoceros?
That's terrifying.
Yeah, it's the CGI is really good, but this has got kind of a humor bent as well. Like all of his movies do have something, you know, humorous about them. So I was really into it. That one can be found, I think, on Amazon Prime, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, yeah.
Or maybe it's Hulu. I forget which. But yeah, I mean, I expect to watch some more horror movies, especially the One Cut of the Dead. I just couldn't watch another foreign language film because my brain was addled and reading subtitles didn't sound fun.
That seems fair.
Well, I'm convinced. It's now Septober. Summer is over.
We're just willing cool weather to come because I'm tired of this 100-degree weather.
No, summer forever.
Actually,
summer needs to die, Randy.
Although I've heard next week the highs are only going to be in the 80s. So
I'm okay with that. 80s is fine.
Lows in the 60s.
Love that.
Not so much okay with that.
So excited.
All right, so Anna, I think you were going to talk about some graphic novels that you had been reading.
I've been listening to a podcast that's gotten me really excited about the X-Men lately.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been was not a huge fan of the X-Men beforehand, just for sort of like sometimes it gets a little too real. And I just don't want to deal with that when I'm reading a comic book.
And then Dave tried to make you read Morrison's X-Men.
But then Dave had me read Morrison's new X-Men, and I loved that. It was probably the first X-Men thing that I read where I was like, actually think this is great. So I've been listening to this podcast. I'm really into it. They talked about a lot of New Mutants and a lot of, like, the Dark Phoenix saga. I've seen the Dark Phoenix saga too many times, but I read one of our epic collections of New Mutants.
Oh, yeah.
Liked it a lot. Then I read Greg Rucka's run of Wolverine, which I am in love with and bought immediately.
Yep.
I think Logan is the best man. and also I think that Greg Rucka just has like a really good handle on how to write a character in that situation. Then following that, I continued my Frank Miller bent, which I didn't know I was on, but apparently I am. And I read the Frank Miller Claremont Wolverine.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Miniseries.
It's amazing.
Loved that too. Super, super good. And it sort of like kind of has informed the way that I've looked at a lot of X-Men comics since then in like a very strange way. You can really, really tell what like Wolverine's central themes are.
Oh, yeah.
As a character through that book. And that sort of like made it really, really easy for me to approach Rucka's Wolverine because I was constantly looking for like, oh, well, there's the appearance of honor versus like actual honor.
Yeah.
And like sort of like the man versus beast that is inherent in Wolverine's character that are obviously front and center in Rucka's Wolverine.
Well, Claremont and Miller did it when there was like Wolverine was like very popular, but they weren't doing like solo series at that point because he didn't have a solo series till the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
That miniseries was like all he got.
Yeah,
and it is like that's all his like Japanese backstory. It's like this was when like Beast Wolverine went and discovered samurai honor.
Yeah,
and they do a lot of him fighting ninjas, which of course Frank Miller's involved. So of course there were ninjas.
He loves ninjas.
But that one's really good.
Yeah,
it's got sort of a tragic ending.
Oh, it totally does. Yeah. I got to the end and I was like, wow, that's a huge bummer.
And then Rucka's Wolverine was like streetwise truck stop Wolverine.
Yeah. Oh, I love him.
Yeah.
He's like a little gremlin man.
Yeah.
He has a nest of blankets and just like piles of books all around him.
Yeah, that was the...
So he's like well-read, and he's like not just cunning, but, like, intelligent.
And Derek Robertson did a great job of redesigning him as, like, this scrappy little fireplug dude.
Oh, I love the way he draws him, and if Wolverine looked like that in Everything Forever, I would be extremely pleased with it. I just love how, like, he just looks like a mass of scars.
And he takes on like, coyotes, not the animals, but the people who... take people across the border and then, like, leave them to die and that kind of thing.
Yeah, he actually fights, like, a lot of, like, in my opinion, like, some of, like, the worst people in real life.
Are there, like, white supremacists involved?
He fights some white supremacists.
Like, militias kind of thing?
Yeah, white supremacist gun nuts. He fights, like, a terrible cult, like, out in the wilderness that's, like, taking over a town.
This all feels like Greg Rucka stuff.
Yeah, it really does. Including the smoking lady cop who is just really rugged and tired of all the time she spent on the force. Like,
oh,
very,
man, I forgot about
very
that.
Very much a Rucka character.
Yeah, for sure.
And then the final issue, which gets a little more superhero-y than the rest of it, because he's pretty much fighting regular human dudes.
Yeah.
But, like, the final one features Sabretooth and Wolverine and another, like, Weapon X project.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Like, all out in the wilderness, and, like, there's a cat and mouse between all three of those characters and the Canadian government over the top of it all. And it's really cool, because, like, there's a point where just shit hits the fan, and everyone is immediately out for themselves. Like, the Canadian government are like, we want the test subject. Also, Sabretooth, we want you to kill Wolverine. But Sabretooth is like, no, you want to replace me with her, so I'm going to kill you. And Wolverine's like, I just want to be out of this. It's so good. Everything just blows up, and it is utter chaos.
You know, have you ever read the Weapon X? Barry Windsor's with Weapon X? I think you might dig that one.
That was real. And also, weirdly, one of my favorite Wolverine stories is a Mark Miller story. I love Enemy of the State unabashedly.
Oh, Enemy of the State's fun. It's like a big action movie romp.
Yeah, it is.
It's got some dumb stuff in it.
Oh, well, yeah.
It's Mark Miller, but...
But the idea of the Hand killing Wolverine and resurrecting him as their assassin, and... watching Wolverine, like, claw his way into the Baxter Building.
Take down the helicarrier.
Yeah, taking down a helicarrier. It is some of the most fun crap I've
ever read. Jeremy Jr. art.
It is. Yeah. It's gorgeous.
Well, you've convinced me. I've been recommended that, well, by you in the past. Yeah. But now that I've been recommended it by Randy and also by two customers independently of one another, I'll probably jump on that next.
It's fun popcorn Wolverine.
Yeah, it is.
But the other thing that I read is Kieran Gillen's Young Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think Kieran Gillen is probably the writer who I would say most accurately, like, captures what I want in a comic book as a reader.
Yeah.
I think he is probably my favorite, like, writer currently working in comics. And I think that you should buy Young Avengers, the complete collection. You should just buy it. It's delightful. Every single character is so well written, and they are so fun.
And the art's by Jamie McKelvey, so it's the Wicked Divine team.
It is. I was going to say, he works with Jamie McKelvey so well, and, like, there's a really excellent union of both Gillen's, like, pop sensibilities and, like, snappy dialogue, and McKelvey's, like, real excellent ability to, like, tell... story through action.
This is the one with Novar and everything.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. It is the book that made me fall in love with Marvel Boy. He is so terrible and so incredible.
Have you read the original Young Avengers, the Alan Heinberg stuff?
I have not.
That's not in print.
I don't think
it
is right at the moment.
It's too bad because that was really good. Heinberg and artist Jim Chung. There was some really cool stuff.
Part of what I really like about this is it's sort of like meta.
Yeah.
And I feel like it probably kind of has to be with characters who can jump through dimensions and also Marvel Boy.
That's right, because this also has Miss America, right?
Yeah.
Or America Chavez.
America Chavez, Kid Loki, who is delightful, Hulk, and Hulkling and Wiccan, Prodigy.
Hawkeye's in this.
Yeah, and Kate Bishop, along with Marvel Boy. So the team is, like, delightful. They all have great interactions. God, I can't get over it.
Is Patriot still in this or no?
Patriot is technically in it.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
But, like, as a weird villain, almost.
Oh, interesting.
It's confusing.
Oh, okay.
But I read through it, like, one Sunday morning when I was opening the store. I laughed out loud at several points. Nothing makes me laugh. I'm a dreadful person. No, seriously, it's, like, incredible. I can't believe that I didn't read it when it was, like, coming out in singles.
Yeah, it feels of a piece with the West Coast Avengers that you love so much.
Yeah, it really does. And, R.I.P. pour one out for West Coast Adventures.
It got 12 issues.
It did, but it wasn't enough.
Alright, is that all the graphic novel stuff you've read recently?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I have started to dabble with Kabuki.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'm far enough into that to have much of an opinion, so yeah, I'd say. It was a Marvel week for me. I don't normally do a lot of Marvel stuff.
But, yeah.
I guess Frank Miller made me want to fall in love with Wolverine. So.
All right, so I want to put a spoiler warning up. Nick and I are going to discuss Lovecraft Country, episodes 2 and 3. And so if you have not caught those, you probably want to cut the podcast off here, come back next week. But if you have, or if you want to hear some spoilers, Nick and I are going to talk about Lovecraft Country.
Yep.
So, I don't know where you are on this show, Nick, but it is my favorite show right now, far and away. Like, I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I might agree with that. I don't know if it's my favorite one, but I'm like, I don't remember what I'm actually watching right now.
I mean, there's other stuff I like. I'm liking Ted Lasso on Apple
Plus.
Need
to watch that.
I've been getting through Lucifer Season 5, and that's pretty good. But Lovecraft Country is, the three episodes that have come out so far have been so good.
Yeah.
And the first two are sort of like a little mini movie all on their own.
Yep.
Like, it is all about these African-American family that
going
sort
to
of found family. It's like
a
veteran, his uncle slash possibly dad.
Yep. Who writes the
Green Book. And his ex-flame, who is like an activist and a photographer.
Yep.
They're
on a mission to rescue
his father,
the main character's father, from what appears to be a cult.
Yeah. So they go to Artem, Massachusetts, which they refer to as Lovecraft Country. They find this weird like mansion, and it's like a secret society, the Sons of Adam.
Yep.
I thought it was interesting that as opposed to like Cthulhu, they actually use like biblical stuff. Like the guy is trying to open a portal into Eden to bring
Garden of Eden,
the perfection of humanity back. The unspoken thing there, just barely unspoken, is they're like, "Well, we're gonna get back to our paradise when there were only white people."
Yep,
it's like a white supremacist magic cult, and they have actual magic.
Yeah,
And their lead Atticus, despite being black, has a tie-in to this cult, which I thought was a really interesting reveal.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the second episode, they've, like, blown up the cult and the mansion and everything.
Yeah, not all of the cult.
No, but a lot of it.
A lot of it. They get turned to, like, stone because the magics get turned back on them.
Yeah, and so on episode 3, which just came out this Sunday, they are back in Chicago. And
a few weeks have passed.
His beloved uncle had died at the hands of this cult. And he is back there. So it's, like, his dad, his ex-girlfriend... or at least maybe ex-interest. I don't think they were ever dating.
Right.
And then they're back in Chicago and dealing with their husband, his uncle's widow, and her wanting to know exactly what happened, and they're not telling her exactly what happened.
Yeah.
They basically, instead of telling her that monsters and wizards killed him, they're like, no, a cop killed him.
Yeah, because...
Because that seems entirely believable in 1950s.
And magic and wizards, you're just going to sound like a crazy person.
So this third episode is almost a standalone. It's a haunted house episode.
It is. If it follows the book, it's going to be like little vignettes focusing on various characters.
So that's what I was curious about. Like, what does this show look like? Because I have no idea now.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely put some stuff that was not in the book, like the connective tissue with him still being around and kind of involved and dealing with like the guy's widow. It's not 100% in there. There's definitely elements, but it feels a little bit bigger in this.
Okay.
I think this is actually the strongest episode.
This was like a standalone horror movie.
Yeah.
And what else is interesting is just like in the first episode where it was half the horror of like being black in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing where she moves into a white neighborhood to create sort of a boarding house for black people, and the white guys pull up and just leave bricks on their horns.
Yeah, tie bricks to their...
And just have, like, horns going 24-7.
Mm.
Cops drive by and are clearly okay with it. So they're basically, they're just like, they're in this boarding house and the entire neighborhood is trying to get rid of. They're putting signs out about, this is a decent white neighborhood, we don't want undesirables here. Like, it is awful racism.
Oh,
and
horrible.
At the same time, looks like the house might be haunted.
Yeah, this house was there's a legacy to this house.
Yeah,
and the main protagonist to this episode is I always mispronounce her first name.
Journey Smollett.
Journey Smollett, who played Black Canary in
Birds of Prey.
Birds of Prey. Oh, and sort of her kind of opening this house for with money that she says she got
mysterious
from her
money, yep.
got from her mother when she died. That's not wholeheartedly the case,
yep.
but she definitely opens this place for people to come. And then in a room in the basement, she kind of runs afoul of what might be what is a ghost.
Yeah.
And
more than one.
Yeah, more than one. But there is a main ghost.
Yeah, there is.
And it's legit creepy.
Yeah, I mean, really creepy. The bit where she's like sleeping.
Yeah.
And you see the covers being pulled, and then you see this like horrific ghost person like pulling on the covers.
Yep.
That was creepy.
It is. It is really creepy. The effects are well done.
Yeah.
But I like where the story is going, and this was just a really fun haunted house story.
Yeah. That's the thing, is like, I thought Lovecraft Country was going to be, when I saw the first episode, I'm like, oh, this is all going to be about this Artem and this cult. And like, oh no, episode two, that's done. So I guess we're just going to do a bunch of like different horror stories, like loosely connected.
Yeah, but I mean, there is sort of like, I don't even call them like horrible. I mean, they were part of the Sons of Adam, but it's basically like the people who were shunned, like the women involved, yeah. like the
daughter.
The daughter yeah. is still around, and magic still exists, and all these things. So we're going to see sort of the reverberations of that go through. I'm just in love with the cast.
Yeah, me too. The cast is really good. It's a beautiful show. Like, HBO put some money into this kind of
yeah.
stuff. The designs, the fashions, like it looks great.
Yeah, I mean, it's HBO; they have the money.
Yeah, but this was a solid sort of standalone episode. I thought.
Yeah,
I really liked it. All right, well, that will close it out for the week for us. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.